Shalom, Rabbi Galperin.
How are you, Ilan?
I am getting better and better. I'm good.
That's good. It's so good to hear. And
how do you say Baruch Rufei Cholim, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's for sure. And it's good. It's good to hear. You sound better. You sound, you know. So that's a great thing. Baruch Hashem.
Thank you.
Baruch Hashem. It's good to have you back and running around. You know.
Thank you.
Well, not running around. Walking around.
Walking is good enough for me for now. I will run later.
Right. So that's great. Beautiful.
So we have Parashat Bamidbar.
Yep, Parashat Bamidbar, and it's obviously the first parasha of the fourth book of the Torah, and it talks about, you know, the Jews that were in the desert, and God says to conduct a census, which is going on, the same thing that's going on right now in Canada, the census, you know, trying to figure out who's living where and how many people we have and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to have the census of the 12 tribes of Israel. And Moses, you know, goes and does it, and he counts the amount of men that would be able to be draftable, age, you know, between 20 and 60 years old, and the tribe of Levi, the Levi, the males had a certain amount, and which they were the ones that were obviously then going to serve in the sanctuary.
So they were included in the count or not? Because I think that they were not included.
No, correct. Levi. They had their own amount. If I remember correctly, I think the Jews in the 12 tribes numbered, I think, like 600,000.
Yeah.
And the Levites themselves, you know, on the top of my head, I think it's give or take, I think about like 22,000 something males.
Okay, and they were
of 1 month and older. Correct.
Yeah.
And obviously there were a certain amount of the firstborns who the Levites were then going to replace, who were disqualified when they participated in the worship of the golden calf.
Yeah.
And I think that was about like a little over 270 of them that would then be replaced, and who would, and then the Levites obviously then would fulfill and take their place. So we see the main concept in this week's Torah portion is really going through the census of the Jews, and the question is what is really so important about taking the census of the Jews? God knows what the Jews are. God knows how many people there are. What's really, really the main idea of God telling Moses, go and take a census? And there was once a small town that consisted of really only a few Jewish families. And they had exactly, you know, 10 men over the age of Bar Mitzvah. And all those people were really dedicated people, and they made sure that they never missed a minyan, they never missed going to synagogue to be able to complete the quorum of 10 men. And one day, a new Jewish family moved into town, and everyone was so excited, and now they're going to have 11 men, and everyone was, you know, they had a party, and it was beautiful. But a strange thing happened. As soon as they had 11 people, the other person now just moved to town, they could never manage to have a minyan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, really, is that when we know that we are, you know, indispensable, we make a point to be there. Otherwise, if we don't necessarily think about it in that way, we don't think that way, it's like, you know, count me out. You don't need me. Who am I? Well, what do I need to be at this certain place at a certain time? I have other things to do. I don't need to be part of it. And this is really, if you go and look, as we just discussed, is what the reading of Bamidbar is how we take the census of every single Jew, and we read this about 2 weeks or so, sometimes it's a week before Shavuot, depending on the year of that specific time,
yeah.
Which Shavuot, which we're leading up to, is the season of the giving of the Torah, and obviously an important and obvious connection is that in the Torah, every single letter counts. And if we find one missing letter in the Torah, it invalidates the entire scroll.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
right.
That left.
So I'm sorry. That's why not everybody can write the Torah. You have to be to know what you do when you write the Torah.
Correct. You know, you need to become a scribe. It's like you have a doctor.
Yeah.
And then you have a surgeon.
Yeah.
Not every doctor can be a surgeon.
Exactly.
However, you need to take that extra step. So yes, you're correct. You know, it has to be someone that's a scribe and knows exactly what he's doing. So we see that one missing letter, the whole Torah is now invalid. We can't read from it until it gets fixed. So likewise, one missing Jew leaves whole Jewish people, a whole Jewish nation, it's incomplete. And it's so important because if you go and look, let's say for example, 9 of the holiest rabbis cannot make a minyan. You bring in a little bar mitzvah boy, a boy that just turned 13, and now the minyan is complete. So when we count Jews, there are no distinctions. We don't look at their religious background. We don't look at their academic achievement. And we don't look whether the person is a rabbi, whether he's a rebellion, he's a rich man, he's a poor man. It makes no difference. They all count as one. No more and no less. Now, if we count Jews, because every Jew counts, then it implies, if you think about it, a responsibility on not only on another Jew, but, for example, which I think is so important, on Jewish leadership to ensure that, you know, no Jew is missing or no Jew is left behind. And it really gives us the responsibility to bring the Jews that aren't necessarily connected with anything, not necessarily inspired by anything, to bring them to some sort of awareness that they are a Jew. And they are welcome to come wherever they want to feel some sort of connection. And you know, it's important to be able to show that person that you are needed, you are counted, we need you. And if you find today, you know, unfortunately, we're losing a lot of Jews to ignorance. Some Jews, some become embarrassed, but they, you know, they have to do certain things and the environment that they live in is not so conducive to them. So therefore, they don't necessarily feel that connection, or they don't feel that, Warmkeit, as they say in Yiddish, that warm, homey feeling of being proud of who they are in being a Jew. You know, you also see that unfortunately we find a lot in the world, we find people that are involved in, you know, missionary work and so on, that try and target these specific people that are vulnerable because they're not interested, in getting involved in anything. And then something appealing comes to them and so on and so forth, and they get caught up. The problem is, why are they getting caught up in these missionary ideas that are coming to sort of convert them, even though a Jew cannot convert, but they're coming to convert them to something that they believe is some sort of Judaism, is because we're lacking on a certain part of not finding them and including them in our Jewish community. You know, there was once a very well-known speaker that was going to be speaking in a shul, in a synagogue, and his topic was, you know, how do we deal with the threat of Jews for Jay and so on and so forth. And you know, they even disguised themselves, you know, with the synagogues and you know, and houses of worship, so it really looks like a religious feeling a little bit. They have to worship.
Yeah.
And he was talking, obviously, about it. And there was a woman in the audience that asked, you know, Rabbi, if I'm traveling out of town and I want to go to shul, how would I know what is a real shul and one of these fake shuls that are set up to be able to trap me? How do I know? Well, I'm not so involved, and I'm not so, you know, well-versed in all these shul, you know, guidelines and so on and so forth. What would I do? And the rabbi laughed, and he said, when you go into these places, for example, you know, these J4J places, they bombard you. As soon as they see a new face, then 1,000 people are all over you, they're welcoming you, they're giving you a seat, you know, they give you a book, they want you to feel welcome. What happens when you go into a real shul? Nobody greets you, nobody looks at you.
Yeah.
And the first person that tells you something is growling and he's like telling you, you're sitting in my seat, get out. You know, it's a sad joke. But sometimes it's a little bit of the reality that it's so important that we need to embrace everyone that walks through our doors. We need to do more than just wait for people to come to shul or come to a program or come to a Jewish community function, whatever it may be. We need to go out and invite them. We need to go out and make sure that they feel comfortable, that they want to come. We have to somehow bring some sort of interest in their soul to be able to find the source of what they're truly missing. And I think it's so important for us as Jews and as brothers and sisters and some of us that are leaders in the community, whether it be on boards, whether it be as rabbis, whether it be whatever it may be, it's time for us to notice, you know, someone, you know, sometimes you can turn your back and behind yourself in the synagogue or in a meeting or in a party, and you wouldn't even know the guy that's sitting behind you that's been sitting at you for the last year or two. Why? Because we don't make that extra effort to be able to see a new face, bring in a new face. And the most important thing that I think is so important is that everyone has a soul. Every Jew really does count. And it's up to us to make sure that we count them in. And that's why it's so important when God decided that he wanted to do a census. In order to show, God knew how many Jews lived. God knew who was around and who wasn't around. But he wanted to be able to show that every single Jew, regardless of who you were, you're counted, you're part of things, and everyone should be able to get involved. But it's sometimes up to us, to the people that are involved already, to bring in the other people involved. And I think it's an extraordinary task that we have, and a very important lesson that we learn from this Torah portion, to be able to bring in, you know, there are no such things, in my opinion, as lost Jews. There are no such a thing as a lost Jew. Everyone's a Jew. We need to be able to somehow just, you know, uncover the little bit of the dust that's hiding the person a little bit, to bring him to life and to ignite his Jewish neshama, his Jewish soul. And that's the only way we're going to do it, is if we open up and we go and we embrace those people. And I thought that's just such a powerful message that we are able to take from the Sukkot Torah portion.
That's interesting. Rabbi, what about if we are talking about inviting people to the shul? What about the Shabbat services?
Shabbat services we have every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. at Shaar HaTzedek, and we have Shabbat morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, we have everyone is welcome regardless of background. You know, we have services are, you know, English and Hebrew prayer books. We sing a lot. And everyone is welcome. You know, it's a community. It's a community. We're all one community in Windsor. That's the way I look at it. And I think by everyone embracing other people, we create this beautiful community.
Yeah, I agree with you with every word.
So,
So, Rabbi, thank you.
No problem. Thank and you, and God willing, we will talk next week.
Next week. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, you too.
Be well.